The Senate Rules Committee will come to order. Senator Pappas, Capillary Architectural Planning Board, Legislative Membership. This is a bill that has been sent here because it has legislative members on a board. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, there has been extraordinary interest in the CAP board last couple years. And I have been traditionally on the board because I represent the Capital District, but there's no real statutory requirement for that. So a couple years ago, my appointment expired, and I didn't know it had, and Sandra Rest found out that it had, and she went and asked the president to appoint her. And I think, though, it's still, that's fine. I'm thrilled that Senator Rest wants to be on the CAP board. But I do think that it is important to have the person who represents the Capital area, because it's a broader area. It's not just the Capital. It's a whole neighborhood that's in my district. And Senator Rest said they do have some problems with getting a quorum, so she asked me if I would be willing to amend the bill to just make the members whose legislative districts include the Capital as ex officio members. So we wouldn't hold them up in terms of a quorum, but we would certainly be in the loop in terms of all the information about what's going on with the Capital area. So that's the A3 amendment.
Questions? Senator Metzen?
Yeah, Senator Pappas is absolutely correct. Senator Rest lobbied for this job about 22 days in a row, and and then we got to thinking the way to probably do it is to put Senator Pappas is correct. It's her home district, so, and I think we're going to do that for a House member, too.
Yes.
And, you know, this is probably the only appointment I have in the world, and I see the president stricken. What does that mean?
Your job's good.
See, online.
Well, the A3 would basically designate some legislative districts, so no appointment would be necessary.
Well, no. What we're trying to accomplish is.
Maybe that's
she
wrong.
Would be an automatic because it's her district. We're adding two members.
Mm-mm. No. Not by this.
Oh, you take it away, Rest?
Oh.
That's not the idea.
I think Mr. Watson, did we have a misunderstanding on this?
That's not the intent.
Okay, right. Let's step
we
back.
We better step back.
Let's step back a second. First, ask what are the duties of the Capillary Architectural and Planning Board? Senator Pappas?
There are... The Capital Area and Planning Board really is responsible for changes that, for advocating for changes in the Capital. For example, if we wanted to have better signage, or if we need to have they did the repair of the horses on top, or other renovations that we need to do, like what we did in the cafeteria. So they have kind of a Capital project. Job responsibility that they do in terms of capital investment in the Capital. They also control the area. There's a boundary around the Capital that goes into the neighborhood. It goes north several blocks, and it includes the whole mall, so they have responsibility over memorials on the mall that might happen to run the whole architecture design process that goes on. And then if there's anybody who wants to build within the Capital area, they have a zoning ordinance that they operate. And they have to get permission from the CAP board based on what kind of changes they might want to make in buildings, or what kind of construction they might want to do. So they operate almost like a city zoning committee. And I'm sorry I had a misunderstanding with Mr. Watson. I meant that keep the current law where the Speaker of the House appoints one member and the President of the Senate appoints a member, but then we add the legislators who represent the district as automatic members.
Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chairman, the amendment also had them as ex officio. Does that mean they have the authority to vote or not to vote?
Not voting.
So they would be non-voting members the ones that locally represent the area.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, this was, the voting isn't super important. It's more to kind of be in the loop about decisions that are being made. And Senator Rest actually requested this. The CAP Board, because of their legislative members, often has trouble getting a quorum because we're over here sometimes. And so she said, well, if we make them ex officio, then it doesn't exacerbate their quorum problem.
So when we're in legislative session, members of the legislature can't make it to the meetings of the CAP Board?
Sometimes people are in committees. They sometimes schedule their meetings that are the same time legislators are in committees presenting bills. It has created a problem in the past. The rest of the year, it's not a problem. But this was their request, and I said Rest asked me if I would do it this approach.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, who chairs this or who sets those meetings?
The Lieutenant Governor. Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, Lieutenant Governor is the chair.
Mr. Chairman, it would seem strange that the setting of the meetings would not consider the potential for a quorum in terms of the makeup of the membership in terms of the timing of the meetings. Is this been historic?
I don't know.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Frederick.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas. So in the end, you want to have the two appointed members who are appointed as they are now.
Right.
Plus the two ex officio members, one from the House and one from the Senate. Well, that's what you'd like.
Who are in whose district is the Capitol?
Which is contained in the A3 amendment.
And Mr. Chairman, if members are uncomfortable with having legislators be ex officio, this was a suggestion that came from the chair of the previous committee. I could go, I did, my original bill did not have it in ex officio.
Chairman, are you ready for a motion?
No, I'm not ready for it.
I think this has got to be fixed.
We have to fix it.
He's trying to fix it.
We're trying to fix it. We got to fix it up.
Are
you ready for it to fix it up?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was thinking about deleting on the bill that's before us, deleting the new language and reinstating the old language, and then an A3 amendment, inserting as a new. Clause G in the bill, what is the clause E of the new amendment are the contents of the amendment. So you'd have the appointment of the two members as they are now. Then we would add to that the member from the House and member from the Senate whose district contains the Capitol.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I think the intention then would be to delete lines 19 through 22 in the original bill. That having alternatives was a solution that the previous committee came up with, so that if the legislators couldn't make a meeting, they would have an alternate that could make the meeting. The alternative plan now is to have the two additional members be ex officio. So you'd want to delete those lines.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, I did.
Oh, you deleted 19 through 22?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Senator Pappas, I was involved in all of these discussions, all the way. And what Senator Frederickson is doing right now is exactly what you and I have talked about for over a year.
Right.
So it would be a 12-member committee, one appointed by, with all the same members here except for one appointed by the Speaker, one appointed by the President, and then one House member whose district it's in and one Senate member whose district it's in. Is that what, and they would be ex officio?
With all four, just two.
Just the two would be
just
ex officio.
The two.
Do you need to go to 12 then or not?
You do have to go to 12.
Senator Pappas, what's confusing to me is it's a current 10-member committee, two who are legislators, so eight who are not.
Right.
And they're having trouble getting a quorum because the legislators aren't coming? That doesn't add up.
Would you add two more then?
Well, no, you've got eight people who aren't legislators, and they apparently aren't coming to meetings.
Mr. Chairman, that must be the case. I don't know what the problem is. This is what the staff has said, is that they have trouble getting a quorum, and they feel like adding another couple legislators will exacerbate the problem. So we made them ex officio.
Sir Pappas, what? Let me ask this. Could we? There can't be a lot of urgency here on this.
No.
Could we set this aside and maybe get a letter from the staff or somebody as to what's the situation? And I would like some clarification as to whether this group has authority over things like remodeling of the Capitol. And if they do, then I'm a little concerned.
It's a current law. And then
I'm not sure what a designated member whose district has the Capitol, why they are any more valuable on the rehabbing of the state Capitol than another member. Nothing personal.
I understand. Mr. Chairman.
It's not just about
absolutely.
The neighborhood.
Absolutely.
It's about the most significant building in the state after the Gopher Stadium, of course.
Mr. Chairman, that's why actually having more legislators on this board is a good idea, because of the significance, and having legislators whose district is not just the Capitol.
That was for Mr. Fitzenrader.
I'm more interested in the other issues, the issues that the CAB board gets involved in outside of the Capitol building. In the neighborhood,
right?
Neighborhood.
Understand. Right. So why don't we, Sarah Pappas, is okay? Why don't we set this aside? Let's get a little more information about where we're at here, and I would like some clarification. What kind of votes these people actually take?
Okay.
Because that impacts the rehabbing of the state capitol. I think we need to think about that for a
right.
second. You know, maybe we've got if all these people can't attend meetings, maybe we've got to tighten up the whole thing. If the four members appointed by the governor aren't attending meetings, or the three members appointed by the mayor of St. Paul, I mean, I just find it hard to believe a legislator can't attend a meeting after they wanted to be on this during the legislative session. I find that hard to believe. And I love that G language. I can't attend the tax committee tomorrow morning, Senator Bach, so I want to designate Senator Fredrickson to attend for me.
I can be on the tax committee for a session?
Well, that's according to G.
Well, yeah. Ex officio.
You would be able to
I can't
attend.
Vote, though.
No.
You can shut off your mouth.
I can vote.
Anyhow, Senator Papp, there's no urgency, right? Because this is the only.
This
may, or would this have to go to another committee? Or
it's already been to state and local.
So this only has to come out of this committee.
Right.
So
what was the more information you wanted, Mr. Chairman?
Kind of what the duties are.
What the what is?
What the duties. We can
the
look
duties?
At the statute.
Okay.
But why don't you and Senator Metz get together.
And a little bit more about why the quorum situation is a problem.
Right.
So the issue is not so much having the legislator who represents the district being on the board. Okay. It's the broader issues. Okay.
You know, maybe we ought to have fewer appointments. Maybe four by the governor's too many. Maybe three by the mayor's too many. We're having trouble getting the quorum.
Mr. Chairman. Just to clarify, there would be 12 members counting the new two ex officio, but 10 of them would be voting members.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Apparently
right.
That's where
yeah. So they still need 6 for a quorum.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll get
all
that.
All of our legislative members could show up and they wouldn't have a quorum.
That's right.
Is that the case? There just doesn't seem to be an urgency. Is that?
No, there's not an urgency. All right.
Thanks. We'll get back to it, Senator Pappas.
Okay.
Nope, no problem. Case, why don't we do, I want to wait for Senator Cohen for 238. Senator Metzen, do you want to, well, let's see. Senator Tomasoni's here. Senator Tomasoni still here? How far away is he? Senator Han, are you here? Okay, Metzen, let's do your bill while we're getting those people.
Yeah, thank you. This is a constitutional amendment that affects how we get our work done here in the Minnesota Senate, or in the legislature, I should say, in both bodies. 36 years ago, the legislature designed the annual session amendment. That's when we met only one time every 2 years. And they never changed the limitation of the 120-day legislative days that the legislature could be in session. Times have changed, the legislature has changed, the public is more involved. And what this does, the way we're set up now, it kind of hinders the work, the day-to-day work of the legislature, because we use up these precious days. And this, the way I understand this amendment, would allow each house to convene and do official business as often as it wants to each week during the session.
former Senator Davies has brought this to my attention. He's looked at this for a long time, and it doesn't change the length of the session, but the way I understand it, it gives us more flexibility on the days of the week that we can meet. So our hands aren't tied like they are today. So I think the change really comes because we're pretty tied up now on this. Again, it's the same length that we're in session, but the way I understand it, gives us more flexibilities when we can meet during the week. So with your...
Mr. Davies.
My name's Jack Davies, former state senator, and I'm here to correct a mistake I made, because I was on the conference committee that wrote the constitutional amendment, and somebody at that conference committee said if we take out the 120 days, some demagogue will grab hold of it and kill the amendment, and we wanted annual sessions. We were sort of desperate for annual sessions at the time. So we left 120 days in and added the sentence that's taken out, but legislative days could be defined by law. None of us thinking at the moment, how do you define a legislative day, and figuring out that it had to be a day you met on the, either house met on the floor. So the amendment passed, we came back into session, or we started preparing, the DFL, I have to say, had just taken control for the first time. So we were figuring out how do we do this, and we all gulped and decided we had to meet Monday and Thursday. I have to say that the first 2 years, we came close to using up all the days, because we weren't used to it yet, and we got a little more careful after that. But it's not worth doing for 2 years, but it's worth doing, this amendment is worth doing for the future decades, because it got on and on and on. It's already gone for 32 years where your hands are tied and you're inconvenienced, and you ought to do this for future legislatures. I'm available for any questions.
Questions by members. What is the reference in law?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, the definition of a legislative day that's in the statutes now, as Senator Davies indicated, is that a legislative day is a day on which either house of the legislature is called into session. So the last couple of weeks when the Senate has met on Wednesday and the House has not, that has burned a legislative day. If the House meets, the Senate does not, that burns a legislative day.
Mr. Chairman.
And, 1 second. And then on 1.9, what's prescribed by law? Is there, once you delete the 120 days, does the prescribed by law mean anything any longer? On 1.9.
Mr. Chairman, the current law says that the legislature meets starting in January. Tuesday after the first Monday, or if the first Monday is a holiday, on the Wednesday after the first Monday in January. And that's about all. It just gives a starting date.
Okay, do members understand what this does then? Basically, allows what to meet every day, but we still have to be out of here by the first Monday following the third Saturday. So what all it really changes is, during the session, we can meet every day if we want.
Mr. Chairman, Gone with the Wind would be the general understood prohibition of meeting on Sunday in terms of legislative day. You could, in fact, meet every day because there would be no limitation. There would be no constraint to try to keep it to a limited number of days in getting your work done. So you could meet every day during that constitutional time frame.
Currently, we can meet on Sundays if we chose,
don't we? Could, but you generally haven't.
But this wouldn't change that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it would make it easier to do that, because if you needed to do it, you know, if you wanted to continue meeting more frequently, you could. Because you wouldn't have the...
Wouldn't have the opposite.
You wouldn't have the limitation of the 120 days and using it all up 1 year so you don't have any left for the second year of the biennium.
Mr. Chairman? I should have explained the public interest in this, which I didn't. The way, if you meet only 2 days a week, you don't get bills introduced. You know, there's a delay. So there's always a delay on the official record of what the legislature is about to undertake. And committee reports don't come in as fast. So there's always a little drag time on letting the public know what the legislature is about to undertake. And I think that's really important that we let people on the outside, that the legislature let people, I still have a possessory interest in the institution, that the people on the outside find out as soon as possible what the real business of the legislature is about to be. Now, there are some committees that get bills referred, I'm thinking of the tax committee, get bills referred from other committees. If those committee reports don't reach the desk because the floor, the Senate's not meeting and the House not meeting, or messages from the other body, there's not that referral. And it's difficult as a chairman of a committee that gets bills referred from other committees to make the agenda the way you'd like to, because there's always that little drag time.
Okay, questions by members? Thoughts? Senator Sundrum.
Mr. Chair, I'm just sort of curious. There must be someone in the House that keeps track of this. Is this Mr. Slobin's job? For instance, could someone tell us how many days we've used up in the 205 to 207 biennium at this point? I'd be just curious. I mean, do we come even close to 120? I guess that's my question.
Once in a while.
We do, okay. Yes.
The chairman, Senator Sundrum, we came close. We came very, very close in 73-74 because we had the habit of meeting and doing business and so on. Now, what happened then is we swallowed hard, and the next time we extended the Monday-Thursday meetings just to play it safe, because we never knew when some crisis was going to arrive in the second year of the session, and that's been followed ever since.
Mr. Watson, something about a couple of years ago we were close?
Mr. Chairman, it was 2004 when we came right up. I think the last day was about the 119th day. And then that was close to the Monday after the third Saturday in May. It was very close to that.
Mr.
But
Chairman.
Other than that, we've not come close to using them up. Because of the system of meeting only Monday and Thursday in the early part of the session to save the legislative days.
Mr. Chairman.
And the day we're on is always printed at the top of the journal, and it might even be on the agenda, but it's certainly in the journal every day, so you can keep track.
And this is 120 days over a two-year period,
yeah.
Correct? Senator Olson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it wasn't the year 2004... didn't we start the second year of the biennium in January earlier? Generally, the second year you've come back closer to the time of the February forecast, so that because your main agenda is to resolve the balanced budget and not necessarily make it a full-blown year of policy and activity. If I was just calculating, just it roughly. If you met 5 days a week, you're approximately 95 days could be burned up from January to the May, and you'd have 25 days left for the second year of the biennium. We probably wouldn't ever meet Monday through Friday at the beginning of a session anyway, so there would be more left for the second year. I'm not sure how you convince the public in terms of a constitutional amendment that this is essential. But I think they think we meet too much now anyway.
I think another issue we want to think about is the wording. Well, let's first find out if people are interested in doing this, and then we should focus on the wording. What's the sense, Senator Berger?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know what your process is going to be for determining which constitutional amendments would go on the ballot. We usually try not to have too many go on the ballot all at one time. And so that would certainly weigh in my mind in terms of kind of trying to prioritize constitutional amendments. I haven't seen all the other ones that there might be, so I don't exactly know how I would rank this one, but clearly if we just start passing them out one at a time, it doesn't really give us a chance to do that kind of prioritization.
I think we will wait. We'll have to see what other constitutional amendments are coming.
Chairman, well, somebody mentioned we meet too much. This doesn't increase the amount of time we meet. And there's no, and the deadline, or the dates are still set. So
it
I think
it increases the number of days we're actually on the floor.
Yeah, but not extended our time or anything. So and maybe that's good to have a little more flexibility. And I.
Mr. Chair, I think that there would have to be an education of the public because they would get the idea we were going to meet longer, and they would say no way.
Perception.
That's perception versus.
I presume that's what the wording 2.1 is. Shall the Constitution be amended to speed legislative work? Not sure exactly that's what this does, but Mr.
Senator. Chairman, I think that's what it does. That I have to tell you that word, speed, came from Senator Samuelson. That's how long I've been working on this.
Well, that's to make it easier to pass the amendment. I don't know if it describes, I'm sure it describes what the amendment does.
Mr. Chairman, let me defend the wording for a minute. When you start reading something that describes a change, you always want to know what the motive is. And I had originally written it as to make more efficient or something like that. And we struggled and struggled and struggled and finally decided that the word speed was the most innocent, neutral word that actually does give a description of what the then described substance of the amendment did. And I've been pleased with it for 4 or 5 years now. We've just couldn't figure out a better question.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
I think it was the year that Senator Pogemiller, that you and I were elected to the Senate, or was it 2 years prior? There were four constitutional amendments on the ballot, and only one passed. One of those that was defeated, I believe, was initiative and referendum, and I can't remember what the other two were. But the one that passed was the one that allowed the legislature to set campaign spending limits. And I've never run across anybody, back then, even at that time, you talked about what did you think? The reason that one passed is that people thought that the legislature was going to limit the spending on campaigns. Actually, it allowed them to set the limits, and the next session they doubled the amount that could be spent on campaigns. So that's where I think the perception of what something means and what actually can happen is quite different.
Okay, further discussion. Senator Sundrum.
Well, I think you're going to set this aside.
I think so.
But I personally think the so-called amendment language needs some work. The speeding legislative work, I'm not sure that the folks back home would agree that maybe more floor sessions perhaps would do that. In fact, may bog it down. I just don't think you need that.
It seems the heart of it is to create more flexibility.
Exactly, yeah.
So giving the legislature more flexibility seems to be the heart of the... Senator Davis, I'm not arguing that speed legislative work isn't a positive thing that would maybe help get more votes for the amendment. It's just a question of whether it actually describes the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that it works as well to say to give the legislature something, flexibility or anything else. That's why I've avoided the word give flexibility.
But you're arguing now a political point, not a point about...
Oh, of course. But, I'm arguing two things, that it's honest and that it's also attractive to the electorate.
Okay, thank you, Senator Davies. We will set this aside. Senator Berglund is exactly right. There are other constitutional amendments coming before the committee, and
may not want
to be California.
I wanted to put in your mind the idea that you can, in the last amendment or in a separate bill or however you want, order the Secretary of State of in what order to put the amendments on the ballot. So that could be even done in the revisers bill that has passed. Thank you, Minister.
You have two constitutional amendments on the same question, on the same law?
No, that's provoked.
Thank you, Senator Davis. Okay, we'll set that aside. Senator Hahn is not he's ill today, so that comes off the agenda. Then let's just do Senate File 238. It's a referral question. And that bill, 238, was referred to the floor, Rule 21. And Senator Cohen, is this a bill that should go to the Finance Committee or not, I guess? We need to ask.
Should the Department of Health has given it a fiscal note?
Yeah, we, Mr. Chairman, we now have two fiscal notes, one from the Economic Development Commission, one from the Department of Health.
Okay, Senator Cohen then moves that Senate File 238 be re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Okay, then Senator Tomassoni, resolution for Employee Free Choice Act or Choice Act support. Members, I think Senator Cohen has a bill related to bonding authority for the University of Minnesota that was on the agenda at one point. That was pulled off the agenda earlier today by myself. I think that needs a little discussion between some members before we proceed with that bill. I've had several members come to me and ask if we were really going to pass that bill or not.
Mr. Chairman, we passed it last year, right?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we passed off
the full Senate.
Yeah, 53 to 12, I believe.
Yeah.
Is that the bioscience?
Yeah. Should tell the committee what bill that was.
Vast bioscience. Vast bipartisan support. Not everybody. Close.
Must be some new members that questioned it. The old
it actually was. It actually was some new members.
Why, they're coming on strong.
Senator Tomassoni?
Yep.
Senate File 543.
Mr. Chair, can I ask, as we consider this, are we considering from the standpoint of whether or not we like what it says or whether or not... ought to be something that goes to the floor.
This is a bill that did come out of your committee, Senator Metzen. Okay, so this is a question of whether this should go to the floor or not.
And Mr. Chairman, does Senator Thomas understand we're not dealing with the smoking bill right now?
Yes, I heard him say that.
Senator Thomas, why should this go to the floor?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that it came to rules only because it's a resolution, and that resolutions automatically come to rules, and then we'll decide whether or not to go to the floor. This particular resolution is memorializing Congress to support the Employee Free Choice Act, which is about people's rights to unionize. The bill in Congress did pass through the House of Representatives, and I believe it's in the Senate right now. This would send a message from the state of Minnesota that we are in support of that, and it's a matter of how union people are allowed to vote for unions, or people who are non-union in non-union situations, how they can solicit their employer so that they can unionize. And one of the ways they do it right now is they do it by a majority vote. This does is it allows the union members to sign cards, and if they get 50% of the, well, more than 50% of the people signing cards, it's different than a vote, and this would go to the floor and be passed by the Senate and send a message to Congress that we're supporting this ability of workers to unionize, as opposed to the current voting system, which has some problems in that there's a lot of coercion from employers. There is people on the job have been fired who have been trying to organize, and this particular system is not subject to the employer holding back the counting of the ballots. This actually has workers signing cards and being and once they get to the 51% mark, then they have a right to unionize.
Questions?
Just understanding, this is an issue of whether we can sign passed out of the committee.
Just for my information, is there some way to enforce this law? This one or the one we already have? So that if people vote to form a union, that they actually get to meet and confer?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, there is a bill in front of Congress now that's passed through the House of Representatives, and they are trying to do this also in the U.S. Senate so that it does become law and that can be enforced. As of right now, I don't believe it is enforced.
So that's sort of a problem right now.
Yes, it is a problem right now.
Senator Berglund moves that Senate File 543.
Mr. Chairman, I just have one comment about this resolution. I certainly support the thrust of it. I believe that the right to organize and collectively bargain, I strongly believe in that. But a couple of these whereases, we have no way of determining their accuracy or even if they need to be in here. I'm looking at the one like on top of page 2 with 77% of the public believes it's important to have strong laws protecting freedom of workers, and 58% of the workers would join a union if they had a chance. And I don't know if that's true or not. And the next one, whereas 45% of successful organizing campaigns, employers refuse to bargain fairly. I don't know if they're necessary for this resolution, but they...
Well, I'm wondering lines 119 through 121 maybe doesn't need to be there. 2.1 to 2.3. Senator Tomasoni, do you mind if we tighten it up a little bit?
I think they're probably based on surveys that have been taken and what surveys are like.
Yes. Right. That was a town in Mexico.
Sometimes they aren't, but there's
2.4 to 2.6 may not be necessary. Maybe 2.7 to 2.9 is not necessary. Senator Tomasoni, what if lines 1.19 through 2.9 were deleted? Does that, for Senator Fredrickson, does that kind of get you where you want to
go? Mr. Chairman,
I'll withdraw my motion.
Pardon? Senator Berglund withdraws her motion. Senator Fredrickson moves that lines 1.9 to 2.9 be deleted.
1.19? Is that what you said?
1.9. I'm sorry. 1.19 to 2.9. And Senator Thomas, let me take her moment to read through that. I don't think that...
I think that's okay, Mr. Chairman.
Where do we got, Mark?
Anybody need?
Mr. Chairman, if I find out that they need to be in there, I can make a case on the floor. I can't make a case on the floor.
Well, you obviously can.
Yeah. You're not gonna. I don't think they need to. I don't think they need to be in there.
Okay. Anybody want to testify on that, Senator Senjum?
Oh, just a comment. I don't know if it's true across the state, but I have
a whole city full of daycare providers right now in Rochester that don't like this very well and have been solicited to join a certain union and feel that the approach was inappropriate. But that's just my talk.
Okay, we have in front of us a motion to 1.19 to 2.9 be deleted. Senator Olson, on the amendment?
Go ahead.
Okay, on the Frederickson motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Then we have the Berglund motion to that Senate file 543 as amended be recommended to pass. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, with our both state and federal OSHA laws, is it correct that if the right of workers to form a union is violated, that job safety standards disappear? That's a pretty strong claim. Is the safety on a job dependent on being unionized?
How about ones that the union works on and promotes? I think in a general sense.
Pardon me?
Maybe in a general sense that's... I don't think it means all OSHA standards are gone. It just says that maybe not as aggressive job safety stuff as a union might be pushing for.
Pretty strong, right?
On the Berglund motion, I think...
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, so we're not necessarily approving this move to the floor. We're approving it with a recommendation.
Well, it is a recommendation to pass, yes.
That's
typically what we do. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Aye.
Motion is adopted.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Tom. Sorry. Okay, I think we're done for today. Senator Hann, again, was ill today. So, what? So, meeting adjourned.
We have one.